everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Normally on Wednesdays, I do about three shows. Tonight, I'm doing one big, very special show. My friend Eric Beatner, who's a very, very good crime fiction writer, who also hosts a podcast writer called Writer Types, is also an editor of crime fiction books. His he has just completed and released his second anthology of crime fiction without guns called Unloaded Volume 2. Eric brought with him tonight some of the writers who've contributed to this book. It's a really interesting way that Unloaded and Unloaded 2 came about. So I'm going to let Eric kind of take over the show, and he's going to tell you all about it. First of all, let me welcome Eric Beatner. Hi, Eric. Welcome back.
Hi, Pam. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I want to note that the women writers signed into the studio early, and I had a chance to talk to them while the slacker men came in at the last minute. I just thought I'd put that out there. With Eric tonight, and I'll just briefly say who's there, are Chris Calvin, Laura McHugh, Dave White, Jim Ziskin, who am I missing, and Eric, right? Did I count everybody?
Yep.
Yes, I did. Okay. Eric, I read Unloaded 1, and it's a really interesting premise. Will you tell listeners how this anthology got started and why it's called Unloaded, please?
Well, as you said, the subtitle of the book is Crime Writers Writing Without Guns. And so the conceit of both collections is that these are crime, mystery, thriller stories with all of the thrills and excitement that you come to expect from a crime story. But the only rule that I gave the authors was that there are no guns in the stories, not on the page, not off the page. So in our own very small way, it's just a way for the authors involved to kind of band together and make our statement that we think the gun problem in this country and I think the gun culture in this country is gotten a little bit out of hand. And it was really, I think, born of my questioning whether or not I was contributing to maybe glorifying guns a little bit. You know, I certainly don't shy away from them in my fiction, but that runs counter to my personal beliefs. I'm not a gun owner. And I think that there should be greater restrictions on guns and a reduction in the crazy amount of gun violence that we see in the United States. So I started to find like-minded authors across social media, and it just got to a point where shouting about the issue on Twitter just wasn't enough, and we decided to do something kind of a little more tangible with it, and something that we could maybe raise a little bit of money for some of the nonprofits out there working towards common sense gun legislation.
How many authors contributed to the first volume?
We have 24 authors in each volume, and so it was really gratifying to know that as soon as I put out the call, so many authors would step right up and say, absolutely, you can. I can write you a completely original story, and you can have it for zero money, and you feel free to give away the profits. Sure, I'll give you my time and my talent. So it's been really great.
Yeah, there's something very refreshing about doing that, and it's, you know, our network has also put out an anthology, and the proceeds went to a women's shelter, so we're kind of like-minded in that way. Looking for help for crime survivors. And so I appreciate, you know, the effort that you did. Are the authors in volume two, I know volume one was very successful. Are the authors that are in volume two different from the authors in volume one?
Yes, it's a whole new slate of authors. We were very lucky that after the first one, I got a lot of interest. I got a lot of emails and notes on the side saying, hey, this is really great. If you ever do this again, let me know. Especially for the first one, it was tricky to choose the right combination of authors, I think, a lot because it's a politically sensitive issue, and I didn't want to reach out to people that I didn't kind of already know their politics a little bit for fear of offending someone or just getting into a back and forth that I didn't want to get into. But as soon as it was out there with the first volume, then it was pretty easy to collect up a second round of authors, because people were coming to me and saying, oh, I totally believe in this. I support this. And you know, so picking volume two was actually an easier selection process.
Well, I'm impressed with the quality of the writers in volume two. I also want to mention that this anthology is nominated for an Anthony Award, which will be decided at BoucherCon in September, which is being hosted in my home state. It'll be in St. Pete, Florida. And Eric and I are actually sitting on a podcast panel together. So in all full disclosure, congratulations on the nomination. I think it's important. It's important for stories like these to be told. And another thing that's really stands out of my mind when I read about this book, the wonderful, amazing Sarah Paretsky did an introduction. How did that come about?
That was very fortuitous. I had a chance to host and MC a conference that takes place in Chicago called Murder and Mayhem in mm-hmm. Chicago. And
she lives there. Right.
Yeah, she's a Chicago native. So the first year that they were doing it, I got to host, and she was one of the guests of honor. So I sort of made it a part of my deal was when I talked to the organizers, Lori Rader Day and Dana uh-huh. Kay, I said, oh, by the way, let me just make sure that I can have 10 minutes of Sarah's time to interview her for my podcast, along with my partner, Steve Loudon. So
right.
In talking to her there, I got a little FaceTime and was able to sort of ingratiate myself a little bit. So when I came asking, if you ever think that you would contribute something, we would really appreciate it. She was very amenable to writing us something, and she wrote us a great introduction. So couldn't be more thrilled with that.
She's a lovely lady, isn't she? She's absolutely
oh, yeah.
just spectacular. She's very generous and very giving to the writing community, and you know, has started so many things. She's just a remarkable woman. So kudos to you on getting the introduction for volume two by the great Sarah Paretsky. Tell us who are contributing authors on the volume, and then introduce your guest for tonight.
You're going to make me memorize everyone who's in the book.
I have the list. Would you like me to read the list for you?
No, I have the list.
Okay, go ahead. I was going to say, I know you're a busy man, Eric, but come on, you edited the darn book.
I did. But after you live with it for a couple of months, you're ready to be done with it. So,
I hear that.
Well, like I say, we have two dozen authors, including some really names are really exciting for me to get. People like Chris Holm, Michael Cardos, Dana King, John McGoran, Lori Rader Day is in there, Alex Segura, Terry Shames, Josh Stallings, Jay Stringer. We have a couple of guys from across the pond. We had, Jay Stringer
right.
and Steve Kavanaugh. It's really exciting for me to have the opportunity to publish a story by the now late Bill Kreider.
He contributed a
story right before he passed away. So that was really nice to be able to deal with Bill in that regard. But I'm also very excited to have a couple of those people with us today. Including, we have, as we mentioned, we have James Ziskin, we have Laura McHugh, Chris Calvin, and Dave White, all on the line. So thank you guys for taking the time to join us to talk about this.
Thank you for having us.
I'm going to turn
pleasure.
The microphone over to you, Eric, and you kick it off, and it's your show now.
Oh, great. The first question I think I have for you guys is, throughout this entire process, I don't know if I really asked anybody, but I want to find out, was it at all difficult for you to write a story with no guns? And let's start with the ladies first. Laura, was this something that was at all a challenge for you, or did it come pretty naturally?
No, my first book had someone killed with a gun in it, but my second book didn't have any guns at all, and I had really consciously been thinking about it, kind of like you said with your work. You started to think, am I glorifying this, and what am I putting out there as far as gun violence? So I thought about it a little bit. So when you asked about writing this story, I was excited about it. I mean, there's so many ways to kill people. You know, it really wasn't hard to come up with something without a gun. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of our skill as crime writers is that we have dozens of ways at our fingertips to dispatch people.
Right.
Chris, how about you?
I mean, as you know, I'm a relatively new author, so my first book definitely had guns, but not a lot of violence. So it was sort of you find a body, how did it get there, who done it, sort of thing. And the second one I'm working on is more of a thriller, but still similar, not very dark. It's light. And what was interesting for me was when you told us we couldn't use guns, and so I couldn't have the convenient bang, bang, somebody's dead, how did they get there? I went to a much darker place. And I actually wrote from something that I haven't written about before that is personal and difficult, and I think it was enabled because of the creativity of not having that crutch of the gun. So it was both easier and harder because the topic became difficult.
That's good. It freed you up a little bit.
It did, yeah.
Dave, when you your series character Jackson Dawn, is he? I mean, he's not someone necessarily lives and dies by the gun, but how would you say you handled the assignment of writing without guns?
Well, I think it was interesting. I mean, you know, I had it in my head that you know the characters couldn't use guns, and I didn't have too much of a problem with it until at the end of the story, the police show up, and I realized I put a sentence in that I had to change that, you know, the character notices one of the cops has his hand on his gun, and I said, oh, wait a second, and I had to change it to hand on his belt because it just, like, it's so, you know, a natural kind of thing, I guess, when you think about police showing up and that sort of thing when you're reading thrillers, that was the only moment where I had to have pause because I was like, oh, wait, no guns at all. So that was the only really tough part once I got into the story.
Well, that's an interesting point, I think, in terms of, like, writing crime fiction in the United States is to not include them in our regular work, it almost is false in a way. Like, you have to acknowledge the fact that they're there and they're pervasive in a lot of cases. I mean, Jim, you're writing something, your series is set back in the 60s. That, you know, we don't think of it as sort of gun crazy, but it was, I mean, America's been that way since the Constitution, I guess. Do you ever have any thoughts about should I put a gun or not in this scene or in this book?
Well, you know, I you're absolutely right. I have avoided guns in my books. I like to glorify blunt objects and death from great heights. But in my latest book, A Stone's Throw, the sixth in the series, for the first time, someone is killed with a gun. But it's only one of the three people who are killed or actually killed with is actually killed with a gun. And you know, similar to what Dave said, there was one moment when I was writing this story where I was talking about a father-in-law and the son-in-law and how they didn't get along and they disagreed on all their politics. And I had from everything from immigration to gun control, and I realized, oops, I can't put a gun in there, so I changed it to something else. I forget now what it was, but in my books, I do avoid because you know there is a lot of gun violence. I think that guns, you know, often are easily traced or they at least they indicate murder right off the bat. Sometimes in my stories, I like there to be some doubt. Was it an accident? Was it suicide or something? So that's one of the reasons, you know, I like the crime of passion and you know, like a blunt object.
Well, and does anyone think that crime writers in general have fallen back on guns almost as a crutch, like an easy way? I mean, you know, there's that famous Chandler quote where if you're lacking a story idea, just have someone enter with a gun. Do we rely on them too easily?
I think I did early in the Jackson Dunn series, you know, guns kind of popped up a lot. And I think what I started to think about that, you know, as this gun issue became bigger and I introduced a character who actually is another PI who has a gun tragedy in his history and he actually doesn't use a gun because of it. And I think sometimes, yeah, I mean, I know I could fall back on it, so I think other people probably could as well.
I want to step in and ask Eric a question. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
You know, Eric, it was interesting when I was putting up the promo for this in social media. I grabbed one of your pictures from when you were here before, and it happens to be the photo of you holding the two guns. And I thought, oh, man, I grabbed the wrong picture. I had to go and find a different photo of you to put in the photo gallery for this podcast because – you know, here we are saying it's crime fiction without guns, and there's you standing, you know, holding two guns straight out. It's like, what are you thinking,
yeah.
Pam? Or you're not thinking. Eric, you write really heavy-duty crime fiction, and you write with guns in your books. So let's turn the question around to you. Was it easy for you to write your story in the first volume without using a gun?
It was easy. I think, you know, it's funny. I did see that picture, and the one of the downsides of the internet is that you cannot scrub the internet clean of something like
no.
that once it's out there. And I do, like, I look back on that photo. I'm like, oh, I regret that. I think it was a promo shot that I did for a book that, as you say, it was a very hard-boiled kind of
yes.
tough-edged book at the time, and I didn't think about it enough, I think. And then when I did start to think about my role in it, that was one of the, you know, that photo was one of the things, like, what am I doing? Like, what should I, because there's a difference between, like, you know, what you're putting out there as fiction and saying this is pretend, and then crossing that line to because, you know, those are not real guns. Those are prop they're movie guns. They're not even don't even fire real bullets or anything. But you can't explain that on the internet. You know?
But it doesn't show like that. I mean, your intention was to show this badass crime fiction writer, and that's exactly what it looked like. You know, and I think the picture I posted was black and white anyway. So, and you did look badass,
yeah.
by the way. You know, but you're on Google Images. It wasn't hard to find you. So I want you to know that.
Exactly.
I did go and change the photo, though, and I think I have to go even forward more and change some more. I think it was Chris who started to talk. I'm sorry I interrupted. Please go on with your conversation.
No, no problem. And actually, it made me think of something else, if that's okay. One of the
yeah.
things in my day job, I actually work on gun violence prevention. I'm the CEO of the Academy of Pediatrics in California, so pediatricians look at gun violence the same way we look at how do you figure out to have a lower incidence of cancer. You can do research and see if lifestyle and the way people eat and so on will produce less cancers, which it then does. So with guns, pediatricians would listen to this, and so I'm sort of hearing it, that conversation you just had, through the way they look at it, which is we don't have any idea whether Eric holding guns is problematic or not, really. I mean, we're starting to do research. The federal government has prohibited, but states are starting to do it again, to say, is it background checks? Is it what we see in the media and what we read? Is it mental health intervention? And I think one of the great things about this book and the fact that you got authors across the spectrum, Eric, in terms of beliefs about guns, is it gets people to start talking about just what Pam did. Is this a problem? And can we start to plug that into then the research design of what people are beginning to do? Because I'm pretty confident we can find out what the big things are that contribute to gun violence, easy access and so on, versus what the little things are where a gun becomes like a lightsaber, where you know it does harm and it's in fiction, but nobody can have one easily.
Exactly. I mean, and I think that's the thing, is that none of us here, I mean, obviously, like, if everyone who's on the call right now has used methods of violence and we've committed murder on the page, but to the best of my knowledge, none of us have taken that into the real world. So there is, you know, that the people that know the difference between fiction and real life and, you know, fantasy and pretend, that's most of us, but it's finding the ways to keep the gun out of the hand of the person who is potentially going to go shoot up a school or something like that. I'm not saying it's easy, and I don't think I've ever met a gun control advocate who ever does try to say that it's easy, but the fact that nothing gets done after every shooting or after every incident where that it could be completely preventable. I think that's the frustrating thing. And just like Chris, just like you said, the whole point of this is just to start a conversation. I never had any notions in a million years that by publishing a little book, it's going to, you know, move the dial in Washington. But if we can just start to have the conversation, and I think as we see now with, you know, grassroots organizations like the Parkland Kids, if you get out there and have enough people having the conversation, then it can move the dial.
Well, you know, Eric, you make a good point. Maybe your book or two is not going to have an impact, but I think if every different part of society starts to have a dialogue in the way that you have, and I hope that there will be more volumes of Unloaded, by the way. That's my personal thought. And trust me, as a survivor of a very violent crime, I can tell you that I'm crazy about this idea. I love it all. I was not a victim of gun violence, but thank God, because I could have been. But still, I think that it's important that everyone in their community, their society, their profession begins to discuss this reasonably. You're not laying blame at anyone's foot. You're just wanting a dialogue. And so I think that's really important.
Yeah, that's definitely was the goal. And you know, I have a question here for everyone. It was interesting. One of the most gratifying things throughout this whole process was now I get the occasional random email from Sarah Paretsky. You know, not to name drop or anything, but she had sent me an email a couple months ago and said she just wanted to let me know that she was at work on her new V.I. Warshawski novel, and she reached a point where in the scene, V.I. was going for a gun, and because of the introduction that she wrote for this volume, she stopped herself, looked at it, and said, do I really need a gun here? Decided she didn't, and wrote the gun out of, you know, one of the most storied series in the history of crime fiction. Yeah, for many of you guys, Laura, you mentioned it briefly, how this had been in your mind. Has writing this story, being involved with this project, given you a little bit of a change in perspective in your work?
I don't know. I mean, I grew up in a place where everyone had a gun. We had a gun hanging on our living room wall my whole life. You know, people had gun racks in their trucks. There were just guns everywhere. It's just a part of the culture there. And so when I started writing my first book, which is set in the Ozarks, I mean, it was very natural that the people had guns because, everybody does have guns there. And like at that point, I hadn't thought about it that much. But as I mentioned before, with my second book, I was really thinking about it. And, you know, writing this story, I was thinking about it some more. And then my third book that's coming out next year, a gun plays a very central role in it. And the main character is someone who is ex-military. This character who is dead already in the story. But a gun is very central to the story. But I have kind of worked in there, you know, just sort of the culture and what it's like in these places where everyone has a gun. Because like you were saying, it is a reality. I mean, they're everywhere. But I am trying, I am conscious now, I think, a little bit more of what I'm doing with the guns in the story, if that makes sense. And
totally, yeah. And I do think it's important that, you know, again, to emphasize that the vast majority of gun owners are responsible gun owners, and the vast majority of gun owners are, you know, use them for sport or for, you know, hunting for food and all that kind of thing. So it's definitely not one of those things, and I never want to imply, you know, that all guns are bad or you know, you should take them away.
Right.
And repeal the Second Amendment. It's not, I think it's never gets to that point, even though some people would want to take it there.
Yeah.
But have anybody else had a change of perspective in your writing at all?
Well, I would say, Eric, that again, since I had never used guns in my books, as a conscious choice from the beginning, because I liked that more, just the domestic spur of the moment kind of a decision. Also, I've never been around guns. I've never handled a gun. And so I just don't put them in my books. But one thing that struck me and got me thinking about this volume, but also the first one, because I seem to recall there was some blowback on the first one from from more, let's say, the you know, the pro Second Amendment side of the argument. And it just strikes me as strange because it, you know, is the objection that we should have guns killing people in our stories, or should we not? You think that this is one theme that everybody could get behind, you know, both the anti-gun and the pro, you know, let's say the pro Second Amendment or pro-gun people. So that's something that it did give me, you know, pause to think about.
It's an interesting point. I never would have thought that someone would complain that there weren't guns in a book, but. You know,
well, I think Eric
Stranger
got some
things.
Complaints about the politics, I think, on the first one. Am I wrong?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, anytime you take a stand on this issue, and that's part of the problem, is like it's almost impossible in this country to have this discussion without it devolving into shouting, you know, from both sides. It's not exclusively one side, but, yeah, the minute you even broach the subject, the hardcore NRA faction will try to shout you down and get you to not even have the conversation, which is what's happened so long at Washington, is we just can't even have the conversation.
Yeah.
Again, I think the value of something like this is that, you know, the polls do show that gun owners and non-gun owners favor the same kind of at least beginning solutions, right? Assault weapon bans and bump stocks and background check. So there is more agreement than disagreement. And so when you put something like this out there and it allows you to consistently frame it rationally, even the description on Amazon, every time you talk about it, you're very calm and very careful. And I think that's a role modeling of a type that can let other people step up who aren't on the extreme on either side. And I agree with you. There are anti-gun advocates who, you know, are very locked into how far they think it needs to go. That's, again, where I would like to see many more volumes also, Pam, because I feel like as someone who works in this in a different arena, that this is valuable, really valuable.
I'm in a total agreement with you. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Eric.
No, I'm just saying I can definitely tell you that I've already had several people reach out to me, so I'm starting to scribble down notes for volume three. So.
I love that. That's really great. I want to kind of change the subject just for a second because it is related, but in a different way. Having been a victim of a violent crime myself, it sometimes strikes me that a lot of gun victims in a crime fiction now are women, and it's a disposable homicide. It's a disposable character. Let me ask the ladies, Chris and Laura, have you found that to be true or no?
I mean, I think you'll definitely see that in certain books. You see plenty of that. And I think Laura Lippman said something about it recently about, you know, there's a book, she doesn't like books that start with, oh, some woman dies and a man feels bad about it, you know, and like you don't know anything about the woman, it was just disposable.
Right.
And yeah, you definitely see that. But I also think there are a lot of people writing stories where they're showing, you know, this violence against women is a real thing that's happening, and they try to show the story. You know, there might be a woman's story, but they're trying to show it not from a gratuitous standpoint or like a throwaway victim, but really look into, you know, what's causing this to happen, this violence against women, and it's a real thing we deal with. So I think a lot of people are dealing with it in a very good way, but there are definitely those few that aren't. And, you know, I tend to not read those writers and those books so much anymore.
I guess, you know,
Pam,
my problem is, I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead. You're up.
No,
I tend to read 400 books a year, and I read across genres. So, and I read a lot of different writers. I read, you know, I like stepping outside of my author comfort zone. So I find it difficult that guns and women victims appear so often. I wish it wasn't so. I don't know why it is. I know why it is, but why is it now still happening like that? Chris, your thoughts.
So I'm really glad that Laura went first on that answer, because I have to say, when you said that, it was kind of an arrow through my heart, because I thought, oh no, my first book, that is exactly, I mean, I have a woman die right away, and I did it without thinking. And, you know, she's a fully fleshed out character, and it's not as though it was than without meaning and all that. But nonetheless, I took that easy, again, sort of like guns, I think because I'm much less experienced than the other folks on the call. I was concerned about my craft and the plot and the humor, and I didn't think about that. And I really appreciate you saying that, because I have a history also. I alluded to something, and, you know, I think many people, men and women, have very difficult histories of violence occurring to them, and yet we don't mature beyond it. I'm happy to say my second book doesn't start out that way, so maybe I evolved subconsciously, but I never gave it a moment's thought that I was throwing women away. I mean, I had women as murderers also, so I don't know if that's empowering or awful or something else, but I appreciate your saying that and connecting it to your experience. I just never thought about it.
Well, I just, you know, I guess what it is, it's the gratuitousness of homicide in crime fiction. I don't think everybody has to die all the time for it to still be real well-written crime fiction. You know, I actually like to see how a survivor comes through a crime. So to me, as a reader, that's really important. I want to understand how strong any crime victim is, how they survive. And not only, I don't mean physically, because, you know, physically you recover pretty easily. And actually your brain does not allow you to recall the absolute incident when you are victimized, the pain that occurs at the time you're a victim. But emotionally and mentally, that's, to me, the more interesting part of surviving a crime, whether it's by a gun or some other means. But we're off track, and I didn't mean to pull us like that, and I'm sorry. Eric, I'm sorry. I just had to ask about it, though. So I'm giving it back to you.
Could I?
Yes.
Sorry.
Sure.
No, I just wanted to point out that it's a good point, and it's an excellent point that Laura Lippman made as well, obviously. And in my books, I've made a conscious effort. I think we all have, as Chris was saying, you know, the victim is a woman. It that has occurred in my books, but the body count through six books in mine is 7 male victims and 4 female. And in the next book, it's a male victim. So it's still going to be 8-4. And I also, what I think is very important is to try to give a realistic portrait of the aftermath. Like, who is left behind, and how do they feel? This isn't a throwaway murder. It's not a throwaway death. Only in my fifth book was the victim kind of an unpleasant person that nobody really felt bad about. But in all the other books, my protagonist, especially Ellie, seems to find some connection to the victim and has a real.
Right.
You know, empathetic reaction and will weep with the family sometimes. So I think that that's important.
Yeah, I think it is,
Dave,
too.
That's what brings up an interesting point. And I think, you know, Dave, you're as someone who's written, you know, like a long running series where your main character is exposed to violence, you know, time and time again. Like, I'm always curious about how a protagonist like that deals with sort of the fallout and kind of the building, you know, whether it's PTSD or just sort of the trauma of being around that much violence. Like, I always think about someone like, you know, someone like Mike Hammer who went through just causing mayhem at book after book, and it never seemed to affect him.
Right.
Do you
think about that with Jackson?
Yeah, I do a lot, actually. There's an old Dennis Lehane quote from when he finished Prayers for Rain and moved on to Mystic River, where he said if he kept writing about Patrick and Angie for time after time, they would become psychopaths because he puts them through so much. And
right.
I started thinking about that with Dunn in the last two books. It's kind of why I introduced the character I was talking about, Matt Herrick, as kind of like his broken mirror image, because Herrick has a tragedy in his past, but he's a pretty good guy, pretty decent guy, and Dunn's kind of been dragged through the mud so much that he was changing as a character, and I was almost kind of starting to look at it as that PI relationship with like a Hawk or Joe Pike, where Dunn was actually kind of becoming that violent person. I think that was the way to deal with it, because you can't have that much violence and awful things happen to a character and not have them change, especially in this era. I think it worked a bit back with Mike Hammer and you know,
yeah.
Magnum, his girlfriend died every week and he went out for revenge and was fine the next week. But I don't think it works as much. I think readers are, I don't want to say a little more savvy, but I think they're looking for something different now.
Yeah.
Boy, I think you're right on that. Yeah, I agree with you, Dave, on that. I just read an article of a guy today who was a journalist who covered mass shootings and things like that, that crime was his beat. And he was saying that when he was reporting on all these gun deaths and multiple homicides and all, that you kind of step around the blood and you just tell the story. And after a while, he developed PTSD. It's a true story. And I often wondered why you don't see more of that, especially in longtime series characters. By the same token, I just read a fairly new writer, Adam Hamdy, whose three books center around people who are in law enforcement and were victimized by crime and what happened to them and how they completely fell apart. So a really interesting character study. So I think you're right on the way you're taking your character, Dave.
No, thank you. Yeah, okay. I think it's hard not to look at that stuff that way.
Yeah, I talked to Matt Fitzsimmons a lot about his books. You know, his character has gone through so much crap, and I said, God, aren't you going to give poor Vaughn Gibson a break? I mean, after the third book, I said, my God, you've tortured this poor guy. Give him a rest. Well, you know, no rest for the weary there. He dives right into the next book, Debris Line, and the guy's dragged through the mud all over again. And I keep thinking, this poor guy, he's going to, you know, end up hanging himself someplace. He's just going to fall apart and become comatose. So it's really sad. Eric, back to you. I'm sorry.
I'm curious to ask you guys about short stories in general, because I think sometimes when I would go out making the call for this, I just assume that people either have the time to write short stories or that it's not that hard for people. But I know some people really struggle with short stories. And I guess, Jim, I want to start with you, because I think this was your first short story in a good long while, was it not?
Yeah, in about probably 30-some years. But I've written four short stories this year so far. So, there's one that came out in another anthology with a kind of political motive or, you know, theme, the low down dirty vote. So I have a piece in that one that came out earlier this month. I have one coming out next year from the Steely Dan anthology. There's one in that. And by the way, none of them have guns in them. So it just happens. And I've written another one that is supposed to be, well, that I have a commitment for a kind of a major publication later this year. But I don't want to mention the name until you know, it's closer to the date.
Until the ink is dry,
I,
Jim.
I hadn't done it in so long. Yeah.
Wow. I've met a lot of authors who say they can't write short stories. You know, that they can't compress a whole story into, you know, I don't know, 5,000 words or something, whatever it is. What was your limit, Eric, on your word count?
I think I might have said 5,000. I probably should have said 3,000. I don't know. I'm definitely on the side of shorter is better. I think, Laura, you're not a big short story writer either, are you? Or am I wrong on that?
No. I used to write short stories all the time when I didn't know I was writing like crime fiction. I thought I was writing like literary short stories, but horrible things would always happen in them. And you know, I wasn't getting them published. I had maybe two short stories published probably before I started writing books. And after I started writing my first novel, I did not write a short story until this one. And this was actually something I've been working on that was much longer. It was maybe like 40,000 words. I mean, it's long. I had a really long thing that I was working on. And when you brought this up, I was like, oh, my gosh, I want to take that and turn it into a short story. And
oh,
so that's what I did. That's where my story came from. So I was really grateful for the opportunity to do that because I forgot how much I love short stories. It was really fun.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of cut my, like Lori, I kind of cut my teeth on short stories before I started writing books. And then when, you know, back in the early 2000s, and then once I got my novels published, I kind of got away from it. And when Eric asked me to do this one, I kind of got in a little bit of a roll, but I found it was, I think I wrote 3 or 4 short stories for anthologies after this, but this one was hard. It was hard to get back into that state of mind. I felt like.
Yeah, I honor anyone who can write a short story, because I don't care the length of a book. Doesn't matter to me. It can be 1,200, you know, pages, and I'm thrilled. I want to read it all if it's well written. But to me, being able to write flash or short stories and compress an entire story into that short amount of those few words is an impressive thing indeed. So congratulations, all of you. Lisa.
I was just going to say, I had never written a word of fiction when I wrote my first novel, and not an essay, not a story. I ran from it in school and everything else. So I was reading so much that I had an idea, and then I did a novel. So when I had the chance to do a short story, it seemed so much more manageable and so much fun. So I've only written 4, and they've all been accepted places. So I think I may have found something that, with a busy day job, for anybody who's listening to this and is trying to figure out how to write, you know, it's just so manageable. And maybe because you all had done many more books or lots of kinds of writing, short stories seem truncated. To me, it's a really exciting way to start something, finish something, and you know, have it read, be creative.
Eric, what about you?
I look at it a little – oh, sorry.
No, go ahead,
Jim.
No, I look at it a little as, you know, what's harder, to be a world-class sprinter or a world-class marathoner? And I think they're both hard, and in different ways.
They both are.
I don't know if there are any marathoners who are great world-class sprinters, but I do think there are writers who excel at the long form and the short form.
I agree, and that's why I was going to say, Eric, you know, you write in all different lengths of stuff. I've heard you do flash. I know you do short stories. I know you do novella length, and you do full stories. Do you have a preference?
Yeah. There was a time I think I probably would have said short stories. I think I'm more partial to being able to spend a little more time in a novel these days. But short stories are, they're so satisfying to write, because like Chris said, there's a little, you get that sense of accomplishment, which is nice. And then I think that they're such great exercise, and I think it's the best solution if you're feeling a little bit blocked, or if you're just wanting to, this year I just spent several months writing some TV pilots, so it had been a long time since I was digging into a new novel, and just to sort of prime the pump a little bit, I put out a couple of short stories just to get back in the rhythm of writing prose, coming from being in writing screenplays for a little while. There is something, like, I know I wrote a short piece, I mean, literally it was about 600 words for a live reading, like specifically for a live reading. So I knew I didn't want it to go very long. I wanted it to be short and get in and get out. And to get up there and to be able to do that and to have it really land with a live audience, and I've gotten you know, more compliments on one short story than almost anything I've ever written. Like, it really does show you, like, oh, yeah, you only need that tiny cluster of words, and it can have a tremendous impact if you do it right.
I am excited about going to Noir at the Bar at BoucherCon. Are you putting that together, by the way? Or is that done by somebody
myself
else?
Myself and Alex Segura.
Oh, and Alex. Okay, good. I'm going to send you an email, because a couple authors have contacted me and said, how come I wasn't invited? And I said, I don't know. I didn't do it, you know. But I, the first one that I ever went to, of course, was in Tampa at the Unloaded Publishers one. Eric Campbell and Down and Out had one where Eric Pruitt was there, and Steph Post and Terry Lynn Coop and Don Bruns, you know, it was a lot of fun. There is nothing like sitting in the audience and listening to a short short, a little piece of flash or a short story right from the author. It is the tiramisu, or in my case, the creme brulee after a very fine meal. It really is. It's an amazing thing. You get immense satisfaction hearing it from the author right away. So kudos to all of you who've written such magnificent stories. I think it's terrific. We are almost out of time. I want to give everybody an opportunity, starting with my first caller, Chris, to tell us where we can find you on the web and tell us about your book.
Sure. So ChrisCalvin.com, so Chris with a K and Calvin with a C, is probably the easiest way to find me. And I'm working on my second novel. So the one that's out is the one I mentioned, One Murder More. And it's sort of a light political thriller, if politics can be light in any way. But mostly I'm just enjoying learning from the community of authors who are so generous. And I know that's said all the time, but, you know, especially Eric, I've heard so many authors say they would do anything for Eric, which is why I'm not surprised you got 48 stories pretty easily. But that's what it is.
It's really true. Eric Buettner and Dan Malman are the nicest people in crime fiction. There is no doubt. It's almost a toss up, you know, on any given day, who's the nicer guy. Chris, I want to say, Chris's book, her debut novel, has excellent reviews across the board. It is on sale right now on Amazon for 99 cents for a Kindle. Go and get One Murder More. It's there for
oh,
you.
I
clicked
thank
by.
You.
Laura, it's your turn.
Yeah, I'm wrapping up edits on my third book right now, and we're talking about how nice Eric is. He was nice enough to have me on Writer Type to ask the listeners to help me come up with a title for my third book because my editor wants to change it. So thank you so much, Eric. And my second book is actually on a BookBub deal right now for $1.99. Arrowwood is on ebook if anybody wants to pick that up.
Well, and I want to just say on Laura's book, The Weight of Blood was an amazing, amazing book. It was an ITW Award winner and a Barry Award nominee for Best First Novel. It was an amazing book. I remember reading it, and I have it on my shelves. I have to go and look for it. You know, it's really hard for me to find books. I have about 2,000 of them. So, but congratulations and good luck on the next book. By the way, do you have a working title that you can share?
Yeah, I'm calling it The Wolf Once In, and we got to change it, but everyone's like, hey, I kind of like that one. So I don't know.
Where can people find you on the webs?
Probably on Facebook, Laura McHugh, author. Just look me up. I communicate the most on there, and I have a website, Laura McHugh Books.
Fantastic. Dave, tell us where we can find you and about your latest book, please.
Sure. You can find me on the web, DaveWhiteBooks.com, or I tweet way too much at Dave_White, so you can find me there. And my latest book is called Blind to Sin. It's the latest in the Jackson Dunn and Matt Herrick series, and it is nominated for Deadly Inc.'s David Award. And by that title, I guess I should win, but it'd be nice to. but you can check me out there.
All right, and also you have a compilation of your Jackson Dunn in a box set.
Oh, yeah,
right,
that's right. I forgot about that. Polish Books put out the box set, yeah.
There you go. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jason Pinter is a great publisher, by the way. I just saw
him
last week in New York. Congratulations, and thank you for being with us. Of course, Jim Ziskin, one of my favorite writers, the L.A. Stone series. Tell us about your latest book and where we can find you.
Well, you can find me at jameswziskin.com or on Facebook, as Laura said, just James Ziskin. You can certainly find it. The latest book in the series is the sixth, and it's called A Stone's Throw. And it takes place during the August Saratoga Flat Track Meet, which is just an amazing 5 weeks in Saratoga Springs, New York, every year, and it attracts people from all over the country, all over the world. It becomes a very glamorous place. The story is connected to, it's launched when an old abandoned stud farm, there's a fire and one of the barns burns down, and it's abandoned, the farm, so people can be, you know, assured that there are no horses armed in the fire. But
right, we just kill people, not horses. You cannot kill animals in a book.
People don't seem to mind.
Don't kill animals in a book. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And it's interesting you say that, Pam, because if anyone has read the story that I have in Unloaded, it revolves around a bonobo ape who has escaped from the zoo.
There you
and
go.
I won't say anything more.
Don't, because it has to be a surprise. To the editor of Unloaded 2, who is also a colleague, Writer Types is a fantastic podcast. It's way different from the disorganization and mess that I am. It's actually very professionally done. And S.W. Loudon, Steve Loudon, is Eric's partner on Writer Types. They are sitting on a panel in BoucherCon. The book is up for and Anthony, congratulations, Eric. You're just everywhere. You do it all. Tell everyone where they can find you.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it was Unloaded 1 that was actually nominated for an Anthony. But Writer Types, the podcast, is nominated for an Anthony this year for Best Online Content. So, yeah, we're excited about that. But I can, I'm always at ericbeatner.com. I'm trying to get better at updating that when I have news, but I try not to knock people out with too much news, because people have told me I put out too many books.
There's no such thing.
Recently, well, that's what I think. But I recently published my 20th novel, and that was the conclusion to my Lars and Shane trilogy, The Devil at Your Door. And I have the end of another trilogy coming up in next month, the trilogy that I co-wrote with author named Frank Zaffiro. Ends with The Getaway List. So we started with the backlist and the shortlist, and now it's The Getaway List, bringing this little madness and mayhem to a close. There are a lot of guns in those books, so be warned. But next January, I have my next standalone novel called All the Way Down, and I just literally sent in my final edits last night on that. So it's out now to some select readers. So all the rest of you guys, check your inboxes. I'll probably send you a copy of that. you can read it.
Put my name on the
out.
List. I love reading your stuff. I want to thank everyone for being here tonight. What a fascinating conversation. I know it was twists and turns, and we kind of veered off topic. Actually, I did. I pulled you off topic a little bit. But all in all, I appreciate all of your input, and I appreciate your writing expertise. And Eric, thanks a lot for bringing everybody with you tonight.
Thank you for having
me.
It's absolutely my pleasure. And who am I not seeing at BoucherCon?
Me. The school year starts. That's the first weekend of school. This is Dave White. I'm also a teacher, so you won't see me.
Oh, bummer. Really?
Yeah.
All right, well, I will be doing live shows from BoucherCon, so I expect to see all of you sitting in front of my microphone when we get there, and I will be applauding all victories. So thanks a lot for being with me tonight, folks. I so appreciate you being here. You've been a fabulous, fabulous panel, and please come back anytime you want.
Thanks,
okay?
Ben.
Thanks.
You're very welcome.
Thank
Have
you.
A great evening, everyone. Thank you, listeners, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night, everyone.